Hi, I'm Asha Tomlinson.
And I'm David Common.
And we're hosts of CBC Marketplace. We're award-winning investigative journalists that want to help you avoid clever scams, unsafe products, and sketchy services.
Our TV show has been Canada's top investigative consumer watchdog for more than 50 years, but this is our first podcast.
CBC Marketplace podcast is available now on the CBC Listen app or wherever you get your podcasts.
This is a CBC podcast.
They look at their parents' lives and wonder, how will I ever be able to afford that?
Today's federal budget is pitched very squarely at millennials and Generation Z, helping them find housing, childcare, and pay for education. But promises have a price, and the payment relies on predictions of growth and on taxes. Welcome to Your World Tonight. I'm Susan Bonner in Ottawa with the details of today's federal budget. It is Tuesday, April 16th, coming up on 6 p.m. Eastern, also on the podcast.
And if you believe in freedom, you have to also believe that people are free to make bad decisions.
Britain is moving closer to approving some of the strictest anti-smoking rules in the world, but the Prime Minister's plan is getting pushback from his own party. And we're watching other international stories, including the situation with Israel and Iran. There are devastating floods in Russia and Kazakhstan, and counting down to Paris, 100 days until the Summer Olympics. The federal government has been clear on what it was offering ahead of today's budget, making announcements on health, healthcare, and AI, adding up to billions. This afternoon, Finance Minister Chrystia Freeland added a few more promises and explained where the money's coming from to pay for it all. Karina Roman has more on what's in the budget.
Mr. Speaker, we are acting today to ensure fairness for every generation.
Chrystia Freeland makes no secret of the fact that this is a budget geared towards the millennial and Z generations. Billions for building new homes to own and to rent. Help to pay for the roof already over their heads. More for childcare, increased student grants and loans, free contraception.
Millennial and Gen Z Canadians can get a good job. They can work hard. They can do everything their parents did and more. And too often, the reward remains out of reach.
There are measures for others as well. Money for research and development, a tax credit for entrepreneurs, a new disability tax credit, although one much less than many hoped, an electric vehicle supply chain investment tax credit, delivering the carbon rebate owed to small businesses. But can they deliver? Sahir Khan is with the Institute of Fiscal Studies and Democracy.
If it's a matter of writing a check, this government can do it. If it's a matter of a complex procurement or a program reform, it's been a lot more challenging. This is where this government really has had a struggle, is on delivering on anything complicated.
In terms of that check, the budget outlines new spending of about $53 billion over 5 years. Few of these new measures are coming as a surprise. The big question was how Ottawa is going to pay for it. The government estimates raising the capital gains rate on the wealthiest individuals and corporations will bring in nearly $22 billion over 5 years.
This new revenue will help make life cost less for millions of Canadians, particularly millennials and Gen Z.
Government coffers will also benefit from higher revenues tied to bigger than expected economic growth projections, if they come true. Freeland promised the deficit would not increase and that the debt, as a percentage of the GDP, would go down over time.
It's not our money. It is the money of Canadians. And they quite rightly expect us to be really thoughtful.
Ottawa needed to show the Bank of Canada it can spend without fueling inflation, so that the Bank of Canada can start lowering interest rates, something the Liberals need if they have any hope of reversing their sagging poll numbers.
We are making life cost less.
The biggest ongoing expenditure in the budget is seniors' benefits, more than $450 billion over the next 5 years, a line item that is only expected to grow as the population ages, and a line item the younger population, the one this budget is aimed at, will likely have to foot the bill for. Karina Roman, CBC News, Ottawa.
Amid all the promises and predictions, we have someone to help us sort through it all. We're bringing in Catherine Cullen, host of CBC Radio's The House. Catherine, politically, we know the Liberals approach this budget in a tough spot. So how does this plan, this document, try to address the party's slumping popularity?
Well, Susan, Chrystia Freeland started off her speech today talking about the anxiety that many Canadians are feeling. The Liberals have reason to feel political anxiety, too. They know that voters are frustrated. They're frustrated with their own circumstances. They're frustrated with the federal government that has been in power as housing and cost of living have gotten worse. Now, this budget is an effort to both respond to that frustration and, to some extent, to redirect it, respond with a strategy that aims to tackle the national housing crisis. There are also other measures like tweaks to student aid. And then there is redirecting the frustration and anxiety. The government is trying to do that through the increased capital gains tax, in short, tax the rich. The government is arguing this is only fair. Implicit in that, the idea that things haven't been fair. It's glomming on to the kind of public frustration that we've been seeing about the profits of big grocery store chains, for instance. It is the kind of sentiment that is right in the NDP's wheelhouse, although the NDP has said it's not clear that they're prepared to support this budget yet. The Liberals may have been hoping to create something of a wedge for Conservatives. They've positioned themselves as being very focused on ordinary Canadians but opposed to higher taxes. Then again, there's no chance the Conservatives would support a Liberal budget, but perhaps trying to get them there to say whether they'll side with the wealthiest Canadians, business community. The truth is that Pierre Poilievre has driven a lot of the political debate in this country recently on housing, on the carbon tax, and here the Liberals are trying to grab back the agenda, be the ones driving the question.
And they're doing that by selling the big theme that they've laid out, fairness for all generations. Are there measures in this focused on all generations?
As we heard from Karina Roman, the focus here really is on millennials and Gen Z. Now, seniors certainly are a big part of this budget when you actually look at the spending. Of the nearly $500 billion in program spending, about $80 billion alone goes to benefits for seniors. And that is a number that is only going to grow as the population continues to age. But the voters this government really is trying to woo right now are those disaffected younger voters, people who are frustrated because they feel like they can't afford a home, they can't get ahead. The Prime Minister said our country will only succeed if those people can imagine themselves succeeding. So they have laid out clearly this housing strategy. But it's going to take years to get there. Ultimately, the Liberal political fortunes may hinge on whether voters can imagine that the Liberals are going to succeed in the plan that they've laid out today.
Thank you, Catherine.
You're welcome.
It's nice to work alongside you here in Ottawa.
Great. Thank you, Susan.
Canadians and economists weren't just watching for the budget numbers today. They were also eager to see the latest inflation statistics. And at first glance, it doesn't look good. The cost of living was up again in March, with gas and housing costs largely to blame. But when you dig deeper into the numbers, there is some good news to be found. Anise Hedari explains.
It's awful.
In Toronto's Liberty Village, housing is where people feel inflation these days.
So much of my money is going towards rent, so it's hard to save and do it all.
If I want to move, then I'm looking at maybe double of what I pay right now, so that's kind of scary.
Things are getting tougher, and I only assume they're going to get more tough, right? I don't see things actually getting easier anytime soon.
And the latest figures in the Consumer Price Index back that up. Statistics Canada says inflation was up to 2.9% in March. That's a slightly higher rate than February. But the cost to rent is up 8.5% this March versus last. StatCan says in part that's because of high interest rates.
I think rent prices in some respects are catching up to the fact that, just the cost of housing is so high for everyone these days.
Pedro Antunes is the chief economist for the Conference Board of Canada, and he says there is good news in today's inflation numbers because that overall rate barely went up.
We're kind of getting there below that 3% within the Bank of Canada's range, target range. So I think that's positive.
Consider what economists call core inflation. It excludes prices that fluctuate wildly, no matter what policymakers do, like gasoline prices. Case in point, if Statistics Canada excludes gasoline, inflation actually went down.
In Canada, we held our policy rate.
Speaking to an American audience in Washington, D.C. today, Bank of Canada Governor Tiff Macklem said he wasn't surprised by the latest numbers.
As expected, headline inflation came in close to 3%.
And as much as a central bank economist ever is, he seemed to be pleased.
Importantly, though, measures of core inflation did tick down again, and that does suggest that underlying inflationary pressures are continuing to ease. So we continue to be moving in the right direction.
It could mean that the door remains open to an interest rate cut later this year, but that also depends on what happens this spring. Economist Pedro Antunes points out there are factors inside and outside this country.
We can't forget what's going on in the Middle East. You know, if we do get another shock to oil prices in particular, that could be, you know, that essentially throws everything out the window here in terms of what we're expecting.
The Bank of Canada will announce its next decision on interest rates on June 5th. That's about 2 weeks after the next batch of inflation data in late May. Anis Haidari, CBC News, Calgary.
Three teens in Manitoba have been arrested in a suspected hockey hazing case. The RCMP claimed there were two incidents involving a high school hockey team from the Pembina Valley area. The suspects are all 17 years old. The alleged incidents taking place at a hotel in Winnipeg in November 2023 and January of this year. Two of the suspects are charged with sexual assault with a weapon, sexual assault, and forcible confinement. The third is charged with sexual assault and assault. RCMP say there were five victims who were 15 and 16. Coming right up, tensions remain high in the Middle East as Israel's war cabinet decides on retaliatory action after Saturday's missile attack from Iran. And the UK is one step closer to banning anyone under the age of 15 from ever buying cigarettes, plus 100 days until the Olympics begin. A judge in New York has told Donald Trump to keep it down. Justice Juan Merchan says Trump was audibly muttering and gesturing in court today. Trump's lawyers were questioning a prospective juror at the time. Merchan admonished the former president, saying he will not have any jurors intimidated in his courtroom. Today was the second day of jury selection for Trump's hush money case. Israel is standing firm on its promise to retaliate against Iran for Saturday's missile attack, but it's unclear what that response will look like. Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu is weighing complicated political options as he faces intense pressure from his allies to show restraint. Chris Brown has the latest from Jerusalem.
Firing 110 ballistic missiles is an escalation.
Israel's military showed off what it said was an intercepted Iranian ballistic missile it retrieved from the Dead Sea. A general said the media was invited to come and see just how big it is and how much damage it could have done. But Iran says it was Israel that actually fired first by killing two of its generals in a Syrian diplomatic consulate on April the 1st. And today, its foreign minister, Hossein Amir Abdollahian, continued to warn if Israel retaliates, Iran's response will be immediate and severe. But before Saturday night, Iran had never directly hit Israel, and Israel's leaders are now trying to convince their allies that they must respond to restore that deterrence, and simply letting it go to de-escalate is not an option. Israel's war cabinet met again today to discuss retaliation options, but it's not clear yet what they'll do. On a visit with new military recruits, Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu connected Iran's attack to Israel's now six-month-long war against Hamas in Gaza. Iran stands behind Hamas, behind Hezbollah, he said. It's part of a much bigger system. Former Israeli diplomat Alan Pincus says he believes Netanyahu will do whatever is most likely to keep him in power.
He will be trounced in any election, which is why he's trying to prolong the war in Gaza, which is why he's trying to maintain a war atmosphere via Iran.
For the moment, Iran has shifted the focus off Gaza and the far-reaching global criticism Israel has faced for the destruction and suffering it's inflicted there. But Pincus doubts Israel can avoid Gaza for long.
If Iran goes away, he gets the accolades for exercising restraint, but then attention goes back to Gaza. He loses. If he attacks Iran, he loses. He's in a no-win situation.
In Tel Aviv, people were anxious about what will come next, but many also supported a reprisal against Iran.
A continued targeted strike is the continued best move. It shows measure without overplaying a hand.
I believe that if we do violence, it will drag more violence, and I don't believe that we should continue doing so.
Meanwhile, foreign ministers from several European countries, including Britain, are reportedly on their way to Israel to make the case in person that Israel should consider the larger strategic issues. Chris Brown, CBC News, Jerusalem.
The UK's plan to pass a strict smoking ban has cleared its first hurdle. The measure would make it illegal for anyone aged 15 or under to purchase cigarettes for the rest of their lives. It's one of the world's strictest anti-smoking pieces of legislation. Senior international correspondent Margaret Evans went to the streets of London for reaction.
The first smoke-free generation. That's what the British government is hoping its legislation will build if, as expected, it eventually becomes law here. The Tobacco and Vapes Bill seeks to make it illegal for anyone born after January 2009 to buy cigarettes or tobacco.
Order!
Victoria Atkins is the health minister.
There is no liberty in addiction. Nicotine robs people of their freedom to choose.
The bill, championed by Britain's Prime Minister Rishi Sunak, easily passed its first full vote in the House of Commons, despite opposition from his fellow Conservative, former Prime Minister Liz Truss.
The instinct of this establishment is to believe that they, that the government, are better at making decisions for people than people themselves.
There is a tinge of a Brave New World feel to it and some mixed feelings out on the street.
I can see why they would do that, because it is addictive.
Nick Allen, who is 30 and has been smoking since he was 19, thinks tobacco sales will just go underground.
It's a nice idea to create a perfect society, but if you accept that it's not a perfect society that you can breed good habits into, then what are you going to do about it?
Tobacco is considered the largest preventable cause of death in the United Kingdom, killing two-thirds of long-term users. And it's estimated that about 100,000 11 to 15-year-olds currently smoke in England. And the idea is, forgive the pun, to stamp out any possibility of young people becoming addicted in the first place.
No. Can I get a Hawaiian?
Of course you can. One of the best flavours.
The legislation also targets vaping, aimed at making flavors and packaging less appealing to children.
Thank you.
Soho vape shop owner Thuy Nguyen says she got into the vaping business to help people get away from cigarettes. She supports legislation aimed at protecting children from both, but worries banning will make it more attractive.
Anything you make forbidden, people want. So kids will want it more. They want to, you know, use someone else's ID, try and find ID that they're not, you know, there's always a way around it.
And some critics say it's hard to get your head around having to ID people who will ultimately have different laws applied to them depending on the year they were born. Margaret Evans, CBC News, London.
At least 200,000 people in Russia and neighboring Kazakhstan have been forced to flee their homes, and thousands more are preparing to evacuate because of the worst flooding in the region in living memory, a natural disaster caused by a confluence of events and, critics say, government inaction. Briar Stewart has details.
Emergency crews in the Tumen region in southwestern Siberia work from boats and use chainsaws to help clear away logs and other debris piled underneath the bridge now spanning a swollen river. More than 60,000 residents in the town of Ishim, which lies less than 100 kilometers from the border with Kazakhstan, have been told to grab their valuables and go. The possibility of dams bursting or overflowing is growing, said the region's governor, Alexander Moore. Rising water is typical during the spring melt in Russia, but not on this scale. 33 regions have been flooded. More than 40,000 residential properties are submerged. It's thought that a rapid melt of heavy snow and a deluge of rain caused the surge of water. but some think the risk could have been mitigated. On April 5th, the dam burst in the city of Orsk. 3 days later, a few hundred residents took to the streets in a rare protest, accusing the government of not doing enough to protect the city or help evacuees. When the emergency minister toured the area, one woman passing by in a raft shouted out to him, asking why he didn't bring Vladimir Putin with him. The Russian president has not visited any of the flooded areas.
The state is very inefficient in protecting people from these events.
Leonid Gosman is a Kremlin critic now living in exile in Berlin. He says endemic corruption plagues Russian society and prevents money from being filtered down to where it's most needed. When it comes to the flood, he believes state media is trying to downplay the disaster.
They don't talk about people who lost everything.
To the south in Kazakhstan, where officials say more than 100,000 people have been evacuated because of floodwaters, the country's president toured the area today by helicopter and met with some of the evacuees. Kasim Yomartokayev vowed that the Kazakh government will not leave any citizen without adequate care. Russia has offered compensation to flood victims, but many complain it's nowhere near enough. The secretary of Russia's Security Council, a key Putin ally, tried to deflect any blame from being aimed at the Kremlin today by saying the widespread damage could have been minimized if the regional authorities were doing a better job. Briar Stewart, CBC News, London.
It is our Notre Dame in Copenhagen, this. And you can never restore, rebuild.
Copenhagen resident Klaus Lockwood reflecting on the destruction of a landmark. Fire ripped through the city's old stock exchange. The building with its spire made to look like four intertwined dragon's tails was a recognizable part of the city's skyline. The 17th century structure was one of Copenhagen's oldest. The spire and most of the building now appear to be gone. Lockwood was one of several people who helped pull paintings from the building.
I was carrying one of the four pictures of one of the four dyder in Danish. I don't know what it is in English, but it's a historical painting, and we could see it was torn in several places, and they had taken it out in a hurry.
The building had been under renovation when the fire started. No one was injured. A ceremony and celebration on a hillside in Greece today where the Olympic flame was lit and the torch relay began its long journey to Paris. That's where the Summer Games begin 100 days from now. As Sarah Levitt reports, Canada's Olympic athletes are getting excited and gearing up for the competition.
And welcome all our athletes back on stage.
Taking to a catwalk in downtown Toronto, Team Canada Olympians and Paralympians show off their official uniforms for the 2024 Paris Olympic Games for the first time. At the opening ceremony, they'll be wearing red bomber jackets and pants with pixelated maple leaves and flowers in an even deeper red designed by Canadian athletic retailer Lululemon. Tennis star Leila Fernandez approves.
Feels amazing. I'm loving the outfit, right?
It's the unofficial start of the Olympic hype ahead of the 2024 Olympics beginning on July 26th. Former Olympian Bruni Surin is Team Canada's chef de mission.
You could see the excitement, and at the same time, they can be a little bit of nervous because there's a lot of them have expectation. Some of them have a goal to win medals. And my biggest message to them is like, never forget to have fun.
Alexia has the gold medal!
Making a return for her third games, Canada's most decorated Olympian, Penny Oleksiak, alongside a young phenom.
It's going to be so much fun.
17-year-old swimmer Summer McIntosh has been breaking world records leading up to the games.
McIntosh, a new world record!
Pressure doesn't seem to make her nervous, though.
I always love swimming under big crowds. The amount of adrenaline you get from that is always a fun experience. So, yeah, I'm really excited and looking forward to it.
In Paris, the preparations are well underway, but with some uncertainty in the mix, like whether or not the opening ceremony will take place as planned along the Seine. It would be the first time that event would be held outside a stadium.
Et donc on ferait pas toute la scène.
French President Emmanuel Macron says the boat parade of athletes poses security concerns, but the plan is adaptable.
Des plans B.
Il y a des plans B et même des plans C.
He says there is both a plan B and a plan C in place. Regardless, after two Olympics under COVID, athletes are excited to experience the Games without restrictions. Kelsey Mitchell took home gold in track cycling sprint at the last Summer Games.
I mean, I knew nothing different. 2021 was my first Games, but just all the hype and excitement around it, I just feel like Canada's backing us even more, and it's an incredible feeling.
Canada took home 24 medals in Tokyo, and the hope is Paris will see even more Canadians on the podium in those new stylish kits.
I think all the other countries will be jealous, yeah.
Sarah Levitt, CBC News, Montreal.
It may not have been one of the great mysteries of the universe, but it sure had Alejandro Otero mystified.
Is he heavy?
Oh, yeah.
Holy cow.
That was last month. Otero and a local police officer pulling a metallic object out of the floor of his home in Naples, Florida. It's about the size of a soup can and appears to have partially melted. The object crashed into Otero's home on March 8th, tearing through his roof, ceiling, and floor.
It was a tremendous sound, and it almost hit my son. He was two rooms over. What are the chances of something landing on my house with such force to cause so much damage?
Lots of questions. So Otero started looking up at the sky, obviously, just in case, and online. He found out about some space trash from the International Space Station, a pallet of old batteries expected to re-enter the Earth's atmosphere around the same time. It was also expected to harmlessly burn up. Otero sent his flying object to NASA, and today the agency identified it. It was indeed part of that pallet. Hundreds of pieces of space trash re-enter the atmosphere every year. But chances of surviving the fiery descent are very slim. NASA says it's investigating how this one beat the odds. Thank you for joining us. This has been Your World Tonight for April 16th. I'm Susan Bonner, coming to you from Ottawa this evening. Have a good night.
For more CBC podcasts, go to cbc.ca/podcasts.